When you experience the amazing deals on Amazon.com, just like Gustavo Fring, you too will be blown away. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a podcast when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from a Los Pollos Hermanos, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now, here he is, the one who sucks, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first ever Breaking Bad podcast. This is going to be a lot of fun. Let me first introduce you to a new person that you've never heard from before on the podcast. He is going to be my co-host on this journey through the final 8 episodes of Breaking Bad. And here he is. He's a longtime Rob Has a Podcast listener, and he's a Breaking Bad super fan. Here he is, Antonio Mazzaro.
How's it going, Rob? How's it going, everybody? This is that's an auspicious introduction. I hope to live up to both of those things, being a fan and a fan of Breaking Bad. So here we go.
And much like Saul Goodman, you are a real-life lawyer.
Yes, but nothing that I say on this podcast should be construed as legal advice. If I, you know, for example, tell you to disappear like a fart in the wind, like Saul might say,
maybe
you should or shouldn't do that, depending on what you think you should do, not what I'm telling you.
Very good. All right. So first up, let's talk about what we're going to do here tonight, and then talk about a little bit about why a guy who does a reality TV podcast is going to be talking about Breaking Bad. Well, just to give a quick history lesson on the history of Rob Has a Podcast, believe it or not, I also podcast about the final season of Lost way back in 2010 in the very beginning of this podcast. So I will remain, I will keep the right, reserve the right, I should say, to podcast about any TV show that I feel like. And we always try to cover big events, not just in the reality TV world. And for those of you guys who have been watching Breaking Bad, there is no bigger event that is coming to TV than these last 8 episodes of Breaking Bad. Is that fair?
I think it's absolutely fair. And if anybody could have made sense of that final season of Lost, it's you, Rob.
So. No, I did not. I did not love the last season of Lost, I have to be honest.
You're certainly not in the minority on that one, I don't think.
So. But I think, unlike the last season of Lost, unlike the last season of Sopranos, I think that this is a show where we feel like we are probably going to get a satisfying conclusion. Would you feel like that is what most people are feeling like?
I think so. I think Vince Gilligan and the other writers on Breaking Bad know the stakes are incredibly high. This show has always relied heavily on, you know, setting up plot and really telling a complete story of this man, as Vince Gilligan likes to say, descending from from Mr. Chips to Scarface. So I think that they're well aware of the stakes that are on the line, and everything that is coming out, and this is not spoilery, but everything that's coming out, they're saying they're very satisfied with how they've ended it. They feel like they really stuck the landing. So they're setting the bar pretty high. And I think if they're willing to do that, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to meet the goals that they've set.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is going to be very exciting. So what we're going to do here tonight is Antonio and I have both prepared a list of what we believe are the top 5 greatest Breaking Bad moments of all time. We both have our list. We're going to share them from 5 to 1, and neither of us have seen the other one's list, but I would imagine that in the Venn diagram of our list, there'll be a lot of crossover here, much like mixing together the chemical compounds to make some delicious blue crystal meth. And that's what we're going to do here tonight and talk about a little bit of what we have to look forward to. And then on Sunday night, Antonio and I will be we're still figuring out whether we're going to be live or not, but I will update you guys as we get closer to the weekend of whether it will be a live show. But Sunday night, we will be recording our Breaking Bad podcast after the premiere, and that will be up for you guys to listen to on Monday morning, as with 10 million other things about Breaking Bad, because this is going to be covered ad nauseum. So I figure we can jump on the bandwagon as well.
And certainly, I know a lot about crystal meth, having used it just about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, is that how you're up so late?
Yeah, I'm absolutely ready. You know, I am the danger, so we're ready to go.
So do you think that the overall Rob Has a Podcast production would benefit from me beginning to use crystal meth?
Maybe initially. I don't know. You have a lot of computers and gadgets there that I think the minute you started taking them apart and not being able to put them together, I think that things would fall apart pretty quickly. So it would be an interesting thing to watch, but it would be pretty sad, I think, ultimately. I do not, as your legal advisor, I do not recommend that you do that.
Now, does the meth only make you want to take stuff apart, or does it make you want to also put stuff together? Because I have a lot of baby furniture here at the house, and it's all like this, you know, IKEA-type things where you have to, like, read the instruction manual. Do you think that meth would help with stuff like that?
Well, they call it, you know, they call them tweakers for a reason. I think it just makes you want to play with things. And I certainly don't think jigsaw puzzles and the like are very popular among the crystal crowd. So I'm not sure about the putting things together part.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen any of Jesse's friends ever, you know, working on like a big house of cards or anything like that.
Right, right. Or playing Mousetrap or something like that. Yeah. Something like that.
All right. So... and now for anybody who's listening to this podcast who has never watched Breaking Bad, this will be heavily spoiler intensive. So I don't want to hear from anybody, oh, you spoiled it for me. I'm giving you forewarning. Let me get the taboo buzzer here. This is spoilers coming. And if you're listening to this Breaking Bad podcast, like say you found us on iTunes, this is I typically talk about shows like Survivor and Big Brother. And we talk about all sorts of reality shows. So That if you want to listen to me talk about anything else, these podcasts are on robhasawebsite.com. So it's for the one person who finds us who's not typically a Rob Has a Podcast listener. That's basically how we got to this point.
You never know what someone's gateway drug will be, Rob, to an empire like yours. So.
Well said. We are in the podcast empire business.
You're not.
All right. So... Where do you want to start? You want to go right into the list? Do you want to set up season 5? How do you want to do this, Antonio?
I think we can jump right into the list. I think that, you know, I don't know about you. I had a really difficult time culling down probably about 10, you know, scenes or moments into a list of 5. I can jump right into mine. You can start with yours. I'm happy to, you know, do whatever, but I think we should just jump right into the list.
All right, let's jump right in. And all right, so do you want to start off with your number 5 here?
Sure, I can start off with 5.
All right, go for it. Here we go. It's Breaking Bad season 5. Here is Antonio's number 5 Breaking Bad all-time moment.
So my number 5 is easily punctuated by the simple phrase, I am the one who knocks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from season 4, is episode 6, Cornered. And I think the idea would be that Walt and Skyler are being cornered by Gus Fring. But, you know, that whole moment is predicated on Skyler basically telling Walt, you know, you're weak, you're not anything, you had cancer, you know, you need to run. You know, you're really not worth what you're up against. And, you know, somebody just knocks on a door and shoots somebody, like, you don't want to get shot. And at one point, she basically tells him, I think, you're weak. And then he just turns around and lets loose with this almost primal monologue where he talks about that he is the danger. And, you know, if somebody's going to knock on a door and get shot, he's the one who's knocking. And then he spits out that line and he kind of sputters a little bit, like it's just taking everything he can to get that out. And it really scares Skyler. She leaves the house and is gone. He gets in the shower, comes out to apologize, I think. He realizes that he's really shown the animal that lives inside him, and she wants no part of it. She's more scared of the monster that's in her house than the ones that might be coming. And I think that's really telling, and he really crosses a line, I think, in that moment in season 4.
Now, that scene in particular and that line has taken on so much of a connotation, and it's often repeated when people are talking about Breaking Bad. Now, I basically binge watched Breaking Bad over the past year, and I didn't watch it in real time, but watching the show as somebody in real time, did people know the night that that episode aired that that was such an iconic moment and line in the show?
I think to a certain extent. I think one of the benefits you get when you've watched this particular show, not in a binge, is that you really see kind of in an extended way this man's descent into some sort of, you know, monster. And I think when you see these moments, therefore, that are marked, that are such kind of deviations or such keystone or big moments for the character, since this is obviously such a character-driven show with great actors, I think they really do kind of tend to stand out. I remember that monologue being one where he showed kind of a rare amount of rage and anger. If you'll remember, and we'll maybe get into some of these moments, you know, earlier or earlier up on our list or higher up on our list, in season three, he's really just not 100% sure exactly how to go about getting into this business and how to really take it to the next level. And by the middle part of season four, he's ready to, you know, be the danger and be the one who knocks. And some of it's his way of psyching himself up. But to see that in him, I think it really stood out that night for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, it is a great moment. It is actually not on my list, though.
Well, that's good. That's good. I think it's nice that we have a little bit of crossover. And if you binge watch it, I'm definitely curious to see what your top five are in light of watching it that way.
Yes. Okay. So that is not my number five. Actually, my number five is actually going to go back a little further into the series. And for me, my number five is a very big turning point in the life of Walter White. And it comes at a time when Walter White and Jesse are a little bit at odds over Jesse has a new partner in his life, a romantic partner named Jane.
Jane.
And she and Jesse, they like to do the heroin. And as you know, you got to be very careful with the heroin because sometimes the heroin will make you throw up. Apparently.
So it seems.
And it's absolutely very important. You want to go to sleep on your side because I imagine it's very unpleasant when you wake up in the morning that you have. Oh, my God, I threw up. Good thing I was sleeping on my side. But this is a big concern. And it gets set up a couple times during the show. Jane says, make sure we're sleeping on our side. And Walt goes over there. And what is he going for over there for? Is he looking for the suitcase? He's looking for the money?
Yeah, he needs the money because he's finally, you know, made this connection with Fring and he needs to deliver this, you know, this money and this, you know, this product, I think, and have this big thing. And it's one of those things that's got to happen very quickly. So he's going over there in a frantic state. And Jane has kind of tried to take Jesse away from Walt. They've blackmailed him a little bit, you know.
Yeah, they're going
to
run away.
Yeah, so Walt's going over there with one thing in mind, but what do you think happens next?
Well, so now Walt is in there, and Jane starts. She's gonna throw up, and Walter White really has a decision here. He easily could help her. He could save her, and he does nothing and chooses to watch her die. And Jesse never knows about this, that what Walter White does, and it's only the beginning of what Walter White will do to Jesse. But for me, this was a very big turning point in the show, and this was the moment that I said, okay, this show is something special here.
Right. Up until that moment, you know, Walt had killed Crazy Eight and Emilio, or whoever those two guys were in the first season. And almost out of self-defense, truly out of self-defense. He felt like they were going to kill him, and they, in fact, were. And so he did, you know, what he had to do. In fact, in season one, he was ready to let him go until he saw that piece of the plate was missing, and he knew, you know, it was one or the other. But with this Jane, he makes an affirmative choice here not to save her. And as a lawyer, I can tell you, there could definitely be some liability for Mr. White in this action.
Whoa.
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a criminal act for sure. You know, partially because he's also the one, if I'm not mistaken, he kind of moves her and puts her essentially in the situation where he doesn't do it on purpose. I think he's maybe turning Jesse or shaking Jesse to wake him up, and she ends up on her back. And that's when it happens. And instead of fixing the situation, he chooses to do nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that up until then, you kind of could stay with Walter. Like, this is a guy who has cancer. You feel bad for him. He's really kind of looked out for Jesse, and he's done some incredible things with his science and stuff like that. But this is the moment, you're right, where everything kind of changes. The stakes do change for Walter, for sure, with the action that he takes or the inaction that he doesn't take.
And Jesse is very distraught when he finds out about this, and not nearly as distraught as Q. Q is very upset about all of this.
Everything, right, exactly. Yes. And what's really funny is I was looking at a list recently of the people who are responsible for the most deaths in Breaking Bad, and you would think Gus Fring, Walter, maybe the cartel. No, Jane's father is responsible yes. for 137 people dying Q. after this incident.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. All right, so that's my number five. Let's go back to your list here. Now, was Jane dying and Walter White not helping, was that on your top five?
It was not.
Oh!
It was not. I do, that would have been probably in the top 10. I'm thinking favorite moments or most key moments. It's definitely up there. And I will tell you, if I had to do five loose ends that I'm waiting to see how they will pay off, I think everybody who's watched the show is kind of dying to know, is Jesse going to find out that Walter did this to Jane and that Walter knows what happened, and how is he going to find out? In fact, in that great episode in season three, the fly episode, there's a couple moments where Walter walks right up to telling Jesse about it. And there's a lot of tension built in that episode just over the fact that Walt could tell him. So I definitely am very interested to see in these final eight if that is something that is ever resolved, that, you know, Walter coming clean to Jesse, or Jesse, I guess that would be the only way Jesse would find out. But Jesse and Walter having a moment with regard to Jane.
Okay.
But other than that, it did not make my list. My second, I guess my number four here is the end of season four, episode 13, the pullback to reveal the Lily of the Valley. The Lily of the Valley, the plant that Walter used through some complicated scheme
yes.
with Saul and Saul's henchmen to poison little Brock.
Well, let me tell you, Antonio, that is also my number four on my list. So that is a match.
That's kind
eerie.
Of eerie, Rob. Yes. I don't know. We have good chemistry. Maybe.
Well, now why only number four for you on this list?
It truly is only number four because the top three to me are just like seminal moments, and not only in the show, but in television. And this was a moment. I definitely think this is the most kind of, you know, WTF moment in the show. This is certainly the one where, as soon as you got on social media afterwards, people just couldn't believe it. Like they just, it's one of those mind blowing things. And it certainly is rewarding on a rewatch because you can see scenes that really set it up. You can see the interaction between, you know, Saul's henchman and Jesse. You can see Walt sitting in the backyard spinning his gun to the point where it stops on the Lily of the Valley. And he kind of casts a glance over there at the plant, and then they sort of cut away. And when you look back at that scene, you realize he started to formulate the idea right at that moment. He played a little spin the bottle, and, you know, what he came up with, he ultimately was successful with. But this to me is just, it's just so, you know, when you talk about the moment where Walt lets Jane die, I think this is another moment where Walt really goes, you know, farther than he's ever gone before. To truly just have no concern for the death of this child. He lived, but Walt didn't care if he lived or died. It was more important that he, you know, do this to get Jesse back in the fold. And with Jane, it could always be explained away like, well, Jane was bad for Jesse. She had him on heroin. You know, she was trying to get him to, you know, go into this horrible life, and Walt was going to protect him and get Jane away from him. And in this instance, this whole thing was done to manipulate Jesse back into Walt's hands. He was willing to kill just to get Jesse to do something for him. And that really truly is just something that is, you know, really what a lot of people would consider the final straw for Walter White in turning into Heisenberg.
Yes, and Jesse's weakness is children. Anytime that kids are in any way the victims of anything, that's really Jesse's soft spot. Jesse has a big heart, and, you know, if Jesse had any idea that Walter was behind this, I think Jesse would kill Walter himself. So
right. Yeah, there's another loose end, right? They could get tied up, and actually this is one that Saul knows about. So this is one that, you know, wouldn't require some sort of deathbed confession from Walt to get, you know, into Jesse's hands. This is absolutely something that we could conceivably get to without Walter intending us to get to it.
Now, the only reason why I had this lower on my list, and it is such a great moment, is that you do have to suspend the disbelief here a bit that, you know, Jesse has the cigarette with the ricin in it that he's going to try to poison Gus at some point. And so they say that when Jesse went to Saul's office, that the bodyguard at Saul's office, he patted Jesse down, and he also, at the same time, he picked his pocket, and then he got the ricin out of the cigarette, and then he put this pack of cigarettes back in his pocket. So just a little far-fetched for me, the whole mechanism. And then they never explain, how did they get the ricin to Brock? Like, Brock never said, like, oh yeah, Walter White, the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, gave me a cigarette full of ricin today.
Yeah, I'd like to think that Walter White put a hairnet on, and he went into the lunch line at Brock's school and, hey, little boy, would you like some ricin? You know, something to that effect, like maybe he gave him some rice and peas. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some sort of, you know, I'd like to think that Walter directly delivered it himself. In my mind, that's probably, you know, the most deviant way that it could have been done. But it's probably also, you know, when you're Walter, you can't have that plan going awry. So, you know, at any point where you could play a role, you're probably going to play a role. So I probably think that he did deliver it. I will say that I think one criticism of this moment, and I don't necessarily feel this way, but I think that some people feel a little bit cheated in that almost everything they see up to that point, you know, they is seen on screen. And this is the first time where Walter really pulls the wool over the eyes of the audience as well. And that's, of course, why the moment is so rewarding. And why that scene that really pops. But, you know, it's a little bit of a deviation from the show, which is so Walter-centric, and we usually see what Walter is up to, what he's plotting and doing. But I think it works so much better this way, so I'm all for it.
Okay, so that was both of our number fours on the list. So now we're both down to the top three. All right, let me go with you want to give your number three, or should I go to my number three?
I think you should pivot to three, yeah.
All right, here we go. Here's my number three. It comes from season three, and I think that this was one of the greatest, most tense things that has ever been on television. And it comes as we had season three, we had the two cousins through most of season three that are very menacing. They're coming after Walter, and they're working for Gus, and apparently they are, you know, they're very dangerous, and Hank is getting closer and closer to figuring stuff out, and the cousins are coming after Hank, and he gets the phone call from Gus and says they're coming, and we have the big shootout in the car, which really leaves one of the cousins dead, one of them left for dead, and Hank in very critical condition for a good long time in the series, and forced to start a rock collection.
Well, I don't know about forced. He seemed to do so very willingly, a little bit creepily willingly, actually. But yeah, that is an incredible moment. That actually was number six on my list.
Oh.
It just missed the cut. And I remember at the time thinking, and I've recommended the show to several people, and every time I recommend it, I'm like, did you get to the 1 minute episode yet? Like, 1 minute, did you get to that episode yet? And when they watch it, I just am freaking out. Like, what did you think? What did you think? Like, that was crazy, right? Like, you're right. It is absolutely one of the most tense scenes that's ever been on television. And I really appreciate the fact that Breaking Bad, you know, is the kind of show that recognizes, like on a show like, you know, Boardwalk Empire, or even a show I like Justified, they do these things with the big bad, you know, where they introduce a character at the beginning of the season, and by the end of the season, they're dispensed with, and that's the season of television. I think Breaking Bad pretty quickly realized that these cousins were such badasses that there was no way these guys could stick around for all 13 episodes and not have a body count. So they recognized that they had to get rid of them, you know, relatively quickly in television terms. And I really respect that, because I think that it really drives the plot. You feel like you're watching a show that has true stakes. That phone call that you have 1 minute is just truly chilling. I mean, no matter how many times you see it, it really stands out. So I have absolutely no issue with your including this here. I do wonder if you think they could have gotten anything more out of the cousins, or do you think that was a fitting end for their storyline?
I mean, it was good. I mean, I can't complain too much. What else did you want to see the cousins do? Did you feel like it was anticlimactic to lose them that quickly?
No, I mean, I think they did real good service in that they showed the flashback with, you know, their uncle you know, kind of holding their heads under the water and, you know, bringing them close together and saying family was super important. So I feel like they did get a little more characterization. But these two guys, I mean, you could spin off a TV show about those two guys alone.
They were very well dressed, the cousins.
Yeah, and the boots with the skulls on them, you know, the metallic suits. Yeah, and but they were also so methodical. I mean, even in that 1 minute scene, the one cousin, you know, he doesn't want to let Hank go. That's too easy. It's too easy. He wants to go get the axe and drop it on his head. So he's not only well dressed, he's just a true, you know, psychopath. So there was just so much. It just speaks to the quality of Breaking Bad's writing that we could have seen those cousins for a lot longer in terms of just how interesting they were.
I liked when they flash back to Tio with the young cousins, and then Tio stuck one of their heads in the bucket of water.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. They did really good by them to show that, right?
Yeah, I like how Breaking Bad in the cold open. I mean, it could be something that from the future, it could be something from the past. They really take a lot of liberty with that cold open. It's very, very good the way they do that.
Sometimes it's a narco corrida or whatever, like it's a, you know, a cartel ballad like that.
Yeah,
that is. They've got some great cold opens for sure. I definitely agree with you.
Yes. All right. So, Antonio, your number three moment, please.
My number three moment is what a little bit of what I like to call the reverse Mr. Rogers effect of Gustavo Fring with a box cutter in season 4, episode 1's box cutter. I think it's the most brutal murder ever shown on a TV show. Mm-hmm. I just love that he doesn't say a word. He walks into the scene, calmly takes off his sweater and his tie, hangs them up, puts on some protective clothing. Walt is babbling the whole time. He's in true fear. He has no real clue about how to deal with this man. And they've killed Gail. They, you know, they're really in a bad way here with Gus. They're tied up and anything could happen. The guy's, you know, Gus's henchman has proven that he can make the meth. And Gus just slowly walks up with that box cutter and goes to town. And it's just gruesome. And I'm not a particular fan of that. But I couldn't believe how intense that scene was and the level that scene delivered on. That's a scene where you can say what you will about Walter White and, you know, the things that he's done up to that point. But that at the beginning of season 4 really sets the stakes very high in his battle with Gus Fring.
That's
Gus,
a great
yeah,
moment.
That's the kind of guy that can do that and walk away from it without saying a word.
Yeah, that was really great. And that guy,
he did say one thing. He said, well, get back to work. That's what he said after everything.
Yeah. That one guy, he was really, you knew that this was not going to end well for him once he thought that he could make the meth himself. And he's like, how hard could this be? And he's like, he's making it. I thought like he was going to like explode himself or, you know, basically like gas himself to death. But no, this was much better.
Yeah, and he had made the fatal mistake, obviously, of being seen at the scene with Gail. And so he had to go. And that's just how ruthless Gus was about delivering that level of justice. I really appreciate the fact that the episode was called Box Cutter. Mm-hmm. And you got, you know, a brief glimpse of a box cutter at the beginning of the episode when Gail is gleefully setting up the lab. You see him just kind of drop it on the floor and when you're looking at the episode title, it's like, is that why it's called Box Cutter? Because there was a box cutter right at the beginning? No, it's essentially Chekhov's box cutter. It's definitely going to come back. And it came back with a true murderous vengeance.
And a very brightly green colored box cutter. Almost an unusual color for a box cutter. Breaking Bad plays a lot with the colors of things, and color is very important on the show. But I was wondering, why did you feel like there was any symbolism to it being a green box cutter?
I'm not sure. There's a lot to be said for that. I mean, green is obviously a color of life, and so there's a nice contrast with, you know, the death that it brings. There's also a good contrast to the red, you know, of the blood. Green is for go and red is for stop, obviously. So there's some play there. I mean, I think you could delve into a deeper analysis of it. And somebody probably did put some thought into it. You know, Vince Gilligan hit the Walt's Aztec, you know, the car that Walt famously destroys throughout the series.
Yes.
It's painted in beige. And that is not a factory color that's available for that car. Vince Gilligan specifically said, let's paint this beige because I want it to be drab, because Walter White is a drab man. Like, he's boring.
Yes.
And I want this to be that way. And they did the same thing with his clothing. So I'm sure they made a choice with the box cutter. Then again, it might have been the only one they had around sitting around on the set. So you never know.
Now, the obvious tie-in here between what we typically talk about with Survivor and Breaking Bad, of course, that the Pontiac Aztec was the official car of Survivor through Survivor 1 and Survivor 2. Richard Hatch won a Pontiac Aztec after he won the first Survivor, and Colby famously got to spend an overnight visit with his mom in a Pontiac Aztec in Survivor the Australian Outback. So do you think that Walter White was a big Survivor fan, and that's how he ended up with an Aztec?
It's a very good question. I had not thought about that. I'm wondering if the Aztec, did Colby spending the night in the Aztec start the curse of the survivor who wins the car doesn't win the million? Because if so, maybe that is a true metaphor for Walter White at the end of this story. Maybe he'll have the Aztec, so that means he ultimately won't, get the votes at Final Tribal, if you will.
Okay, fair enough. The car curse. All right, well, your number three moment very closely coincides with my number two moment, which was in the episode preceding Gus killing his henchman with the box cutter. And it was the reason why Gus wanted to kill the guy with the box cutter, which was the death of Gale, who had been the guy that they were looking to replace Walter with. And so Walt sends Jesse to go become ultimately the one who knocks. And poor Gale. What a nice man.
He really was. I mean, the man loved his karaoke. He loved his Walt Whitman. He loved his cooking, and he loved his cooking.
Esperanto and fair trade cocoa.
He's really just a perfect citizen, except for the whole cooking of meth thing.
Yes, yes. Poor Gale.
It's really sad. It's kind of like killing a very innocent animal who also is responsible for, death and murder throughout the world. Yeah.
Do you think that Gale was potentially a Survivor fan?
Definitely. Gale. I think Gale's favorite season was Vanuatu, for sure.
Definitely. What year is it for Walter White?
That's actually a good question. I'm not 100% sure on this. And it's actually up for debate because there's been some passage of time that we're not sure about. But it is definitely the later part of, the 2000s. I'm not exactly sure of the specific, set in the time. I think it's 2008 to 2010 or 2009 to 2011 in that range.
I think so, because the series premieres in 2009. So then we got about a year out from Walter's 50th birthday. We get to 51, so that would make it 2010. And then when he's 52, we'd imagine that's sometime in 2011. So just to put that in the Survivor timeline. So I guess that means that we're sometime around Survivor South Pacific in that area right in there.
That sounds about right. I'm not sure when it would be more appropriate if it was heroes versus villains, but I'm not sure exactly.
No, that happened already. That's in the past.
Yeah. So
Survivor Redemption Island a little bit.
Oh, not bad. Or blood versus water, maybe.
No, that's in the future. That's in.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
Jumping ahead. Yeah. All right. So the death of Gale. I mean, it was just so. It was like Walter was, his ass was to the wall, and Gus was gonna replace him. And so they call up Jesse, and it's like, Jesse, you have to go kill Gale. And just they open the door. And boom, and just that at that point, it was also that Walter had outplayed Gus at that point. And it was just such a great moment in the show. And it was such a great cliffhanger to end the third season on.
I have a question for you. You mentioned earlier, when you were talking about Jane, the many things that Walt has done to Jesse. And we talked about, the rice in with Brock. I'm wondering where on the list of things Walt has done to Jesse do you place this, where Walt has essentially manipulated Jesse into feeling like he has to kill Gale?
So this is the bad things that Walt has done to Jesse power rankings?
This is absolutely what that is, 100%.
Well, this is high up on the list because the other bad things that we've mentioned that Walt has done to Jesse, Jesse doesn't know about.
Right.
So Jesse could kind of just think, oh, I'm unlucky. My girlfriend died. I'm unlucky. My new girlfriend's kid got sick. So this is pretty high up on the list. I'm trying to think if there's anything worse. Yeah, this is probably directly the worst, because then Jesse kind of goes in a funk here for about a whole season after this.
I was going to say, very existential, like he starts racing go-karts, and he just leaves his money lying around his house, and he starts having these just ridiculous parties with people that he wants nothing to do with, and yeah, he's very, very torn up over it. In fact, in that box cutter episode, I'm not sure he really says a word in the entire episode or much of anything until they get to the diner. And when Gus does, you know, commit the act with the box cutter, it's a great bit of, you know, choice by Aaron Paul to kind of lean forward into the action. Like he's intrigued by this because he's very much on the brink of, you know, just kind of, you know, falling completely apart. So this sort of real primal action is something that really speaks to him. And if you ever watch that scene again, Aaron Paul's face and reaction is truly like, not really congruent with what's happening on screen. But when you actually think about what's happened to Jesse, just, you know, in the context of the series, it works really, really well.
All right, Antonio, was the death of Gail in your top two?
The death of Gail was not in my
top two. Oh, no. Okay.
Not
all right,
in
so,
my top two.
All right, so we have your top two. All right, so give me your number two.
My number two, it's still kind of scary to me to this day. It's kind of a truly disturbing moment on the show. It's the end of season 4, episode 11, Crawl Space. Walt laughing just maniacally at the fate that has befallen, you know, him and Skyler after Gus is on Walt's tail. And Walt just is ready to take the money and run, take Saul's advice, get the identities changed and everything. And Walt runs into the house. He's called Skyler in advance, like, we got to go. He gets down to the crawl space, and he starts opening the vacuum packs. And I guess I shouldn't say there's nothing. There's probably tens of thousands of dollars there, but there's certainly not hundreds of thousands of dollars there.
Yeah.
And he's very, very upset. And the way the scene is shot, you know, you're looking down at Walt through this crawl space hole, and Skyler is very upset, and the phone is ringing, and there's this drum beat slowly in the background of the scene. And Walt just starts, you know, with this howl of a laugh that, you know, when he finds out the money's gone to Beneke, he just can't handle it anymore. He truly, truly cracks. And that camera slowly pulls back away, you know, almost looking like Walt is in an open casket in that crawl space. And then the episode just ends. And there's just no way you walk away from the end of that episode not feeling like this show has really raised the stakes in a very uncomfortable way. It just is a very chilling scene, and one that Bryan Cranston deserves every accolade he'll get. And scenes like this are certainly representative of why. And it anytime I think about scenes in Breaking Bad, I can't get away from this moment.
Yeah, that's a good moment. I did not have that on my list.
I suspected not, but
yes.
You know, the issue here is I have no issue with any of the moments that you've selected. The show is so full of great ones that, you know, you could make a list of 15 to 20 without really blinking. And so
that,
you know,
was disturbing, the moment that you're talking about. I remember it well.
It's very disturbing.
Very much like a O. Henry poem.
Very much like that, I think. Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Yes. All right. So we both have one moment left. Now, I think that it is highly likely that this could be the same moment. Could you tell me what season your moment is from?
I thought earlier when you mentioned that you had a scene, I think we're going to have a different moment. My scene is from season 3.
Okay. Well, mine is from season 4.
Okay. And I think that I might be able to pin down your moment.
Okay. Well,
and, because it's almost on my list, and it's one that I think about a lot, and it's definitely probably the most memorable moment of the series. It just doesn't happen to be my favorite one.
Okay, well, I think there's a little more intrigue than to what yours is. So let me go ahead with mine. It is the greatest, possibly the greatest television moment to include a bell of all time. So it holds a very special place in my heart where Walter, for almost the better part of a season now, has just been chased and chased and chased by Gus, and he's never been able to get the better of him until he realizes that he goes to visit Tio in the nursing home, and they bring Tio in for questioning, and he knows that's going to get Gus to go to the nursing home, and so they wire Tio's wheelchair with the bomb and the mechanism to make it go off. Is Tio, and he's ringing and he's ringing the bell, and not only does Gus, you know, the big explosion, but then, like, the capper to it all is then Gus walks out seemingly unscathed, and it's like, what, he didn't die? And then the camera, like, rotates around, and we see that Gus has half of his face completely blown off, and he, like, in perfect Gus mannerisms, he adjusts his tie and then just keels over, and it's fantastic.
It truly is a phenomenal moment, and it really, that you bring it up. I watched Breaking Bad with my family, and when Gus stepped out of that room, my mom yelled at the television, like, no, he has to die. Like, she just, they set it up so well that she was literally angry that he was stepping out of that room. And I think that she's probably not alone in sharing that feeling. And that was such a payoff with the tie, for sure. I mean, it's a perfect final moment for that character, a guy who's, you know, taken out drug cartels. He's walked right into sniper fire. He has, you know, set a towel on the floor very neatly while he threw up the poison that he had poisoned everyone at a party with. He's done all these very meticulous things. So for that last moment to straighten his tie, it is really, truly great. And, you know, the Hector Salamanca in the room with the bell, all of his facial actions trying to end it, you know, phenomenal.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, that is the only reason that didn't make my list is I almost consider the Lily of the Valley, you know, payoff to be part and parcel to that whole, you know, line of action, starting with when Walt's trying to bring the bomb and put the bomb on the car. And then how is he going to get this plan to work, and all the aspects of the plan that certainly culminates with the, you know, with the bomb in the room. And it's definitely the biggest moment, I think, in the series. I just think the Lily of the Valley really is the capper to that for me. And so to me, they're all kind of one big thing. But it is truly the, you know, the most memorable moment that happens on the show. Not necessarily my favorite single moment, which is, you know, which is a little bit different. But it is definitely the most memorable moment, I think, on the show.
Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. So here is Antonio's number one Breaking Bad moment of all time, and of course this is the time that Marie was shoplifting when she went to go look at the house, and she stole the, what was it, a spoon?
I'm just a little angry that you got an advanced look at my list somehow, so I don't want to. Yeah, it was a spoon. No, I mean, I just have a thing about the color purple. What can I say?
Yeah.
Not the movie or the book, the color itself. No, my number one moment, to me, the Breaking Bad show is so much a show about Walt and Jesse, not just Walter White. I think that they thought they would kill Jesse early on in the run. They realized when they brought Jesse in that Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston had this incredible chemistry together, you know, literally, and that it would be really foolish to kind of waste him. And then, as we've talked about throughout the series, there have been these moments where Walt has caused Jesse to do one thing, or he's used Jesse in one way, shape, or form. And that's where a lot of the dramatic tension of this show comes from. And that's certainly what I think a lot of people, you know, are looking toward the final season for payoff on, is what's going to happen with Walt and Jesse. If you know, Walt goes out defending Jesse or something, I think that'll be one way Walt can redeem himself in terms of the actions that he's taken. If he, you know, is truly selfless at one point and, you know, gives his life for Jesse's or something to that effect, I think people will not only feel, you know, that they've been, you know, rewarded, but they'll feel that it's a natural payoff. And the reason why is moments like my number one moment, which is from season 3, episode 11, Half Measures. The simple word from Walter White is run.
Oh, yes.
It's the scene where Walter has, you know, has gone in this, you know, situation where he wants to work with Gus, and Gus is working with the cartel, and the cartel has no problem using children. As you mentioned earlier, Jesse has a real soft spot for children. He's, you know, become friends with this girl whose little brother is involved in these, you know, drug situations. I think his name is Tomas. Tomas is killed, you know, as part of the drug, you know, trade. And Jesse finds out, and Jesse is in such a bad way that Jesse's essentially suicidal. He's ready to go, you know, just meet his maker, you know, going out guns blazing. Walt happens to be at home for a quiet family dinner with Skyler and Walter Jr. and sees on the news that this thing has happened. And he gets an inkling that Jesse's going to do something, and he just kind of disappears. I have to go. And you see Jesse kind of, I think he's snorting some meth maybe, and he just goes into action with a gun, and you see the two guys pull the gun on him, and then all of a sudden the avenging angel, Walter White, comes in with the Aztec, just runs the two guys over, and you know, then immediately runs over to the other guy, takes his gun, and for the first time in the show, affirmatively kills someone. He takes the gun and shoots the guy in the head with it, you know, just no problem. Like, he's killed guys in self-defense before, you know, he took no action and let Jane die. This is a moment where he's taking a gun, shooting somebody in the head, and Jesse is really taken aback by it. And then the camera from the low angle just kind of looks up at Walter as he, you know, you can see his breath in the air, and he just says, run. And that moment is just, to me, so powerful and so memorable. I could never not see that moment and just have the same feelings I felt when I first saw it. I just want to cheer when I see it happen. It's truly, truly memorable to me, and certainly my favorite moment.
It's a good moment. You can't deny that. I feel like, though, that what bothered me was like, oh, you're screwing everything up. Because, I mean, that moment sets up a series of events, which for the next, you know, season and a half is just Walter is running for his life. And
yeah.
I just felt like... I still don't know. Like, would you think Walt would really do that? Like, I mean, it seemed like he would to take such a stand against Gus and his guys for what they did, and the person that he ultimately becomes. Do you feel like that Walter would really do that?
I think that the fact that Walt did it is indicative of the struggle within Walter White between good and bad. He's very impetuous. We know that he's left behind this Nobel Prize winning, you know, chemistry research over, you know, personal slight, because he felt like, you know, he didn't fit in, you know, with this couple and just felt personally slighted. And then he wouldn't take their money when he needed it most. So he does a lot of things that are really counterintuitive to his best interest. There's been numerous times where he could have gotten out of the drug game and just washed his hands of it and made enough money to truly take care of himself, and he hasn't. So he's always been his own worst enemy in his life. He's got this relationship with his mother. She's alive. She's distant. We've never seen her. So we don't really know what's going on there. We don't really get at a lot of why Walter is the way he is, but we know that he's the kind of person who's given to these sort of rash, irrational acts that have doomed him. It's really the pattern of his life. And, you know, at the beginning of the series, when we meet him, he's living a very safe life, you know, as a defense against that. I think he's putting himself in situations where he can't really cause any problems, and he wants to push back against that. And he says at one point in the first episode, I am awake, you know, and then when he awakes, who knows? He gets into all sorts of things that it doesn't have to, that he's just following some sort of impulse. And I think this is definitely one of them. And part of the reason why I like it so much is, I don't want to watch a show where the main character is someone so truly horrible. I want to know that there's some human inside him that, you know, is capable of being spared or rescued, that there can be some redemptive arc. And I think that this is a very key example of when that, you know, takes place. This is something where he's already gotten in bed with Gus. As a matter of fact, it's his kind of dealings that have put them in this situation. And against his better interest, he's going to try to save Jesse. And I think that's very in character with what Walt would do.
How do you think everything goes for Walter White if he decides to not do anything about Jesse here with this whole thing? Does he just continue to work for Gus forever?
Well, it's interesting because think about this. Gail learned the recipe, and it took having Jesse in the fold as kind of that outside presence to be able to take Gail out. So without Jesse in the mix, I think Walt may well have met his maker at the hands of Gus Fring, for sure. I think that was probably always Gus's plan. Gus's problem with Walt was always Jesse. And, you know, he didn't like some aspects of Walt's character that he learned about, but he didn't want to get in business with him because what he mainly didn't like about Walt's character is that he would be, you know, in business with a guy like Jesse, mm-hmm. who was seen as a bit of a hothead and impetuous and the sort of things that Walter ultimately is. And that's why Jesse and Walt make a good match on some level. But I think he would have met his maker at the hands of Gus Fring for sure without having Jesse as kind of his, you know, second that could, you know, he could use not really as maybe as a pawn just to kind of get the angle on taking out the king.
OK, so we've recapped our top five moments. Let's go real quick. What are the loose threads that we hope to see tied up in these next eight episodes?
Well, as we mentioned, I think we want to see what happens with some of what goes on with these secrets that Walt has from Jesse, whether it's Jane or whether it's Brock. You definitely want to see where that pays off. I also personally want to see what happens to that ricin. He's got it. You know, it's like we talked about Chekhov's gun. It's there. We know it's there. It's waiting behind that electrical outlet, waiting to be used. It's been around for a really long time. So I'm curious as to what's going to happen with some element of what he's got left.
Of course, the big thing from the season 5 part 1 finale was Hank discovering the book in the bathroom and learning the putting two and two together with the WW is actually Walter White and not Walt Whitman in the book, and putting the pieces together of the Gail and Walter White connection. Where do you think that we pick this up in the premiere? Do you think that we will pick it up with Hank coming out of the bathroom?
You talked about Breaking Bad's cold opens. I don't know how they can do a cold open like that. I suppose they could have Hank come out of the bathroom, say something about needing to talk to Walt, and then, you know, just getting right to that moment and then pulling back. I don't know that that's what they'll do. They also could revisit some of how they started the first half of season 5 with this flashing forward a bit in time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they're going to pick that storyline up. We've covered a lot of time now throughout season 5. So I don't know exactly where they're going to want to begin, but they're certainly going to want to get to Hank relatively quickly, whether it's in the first scene or within the first few minutes of the first episode, because that's certainly what's on everyone's mind.
Do you think in these last episodes that Walt will kill Hank?
I do not. What do you think?
Which is more likely? Do you think that Hank will bring Walt to justice or Walt will kill Hank? You got to pick one. Which is more likely?
I think that if I had to pick one, I'd say it's more likely that Hank brings Walt to justice. But I do think that I think my belief is that it'll probably be more of a hybrid thing. I think there's a lot of good drama in Hank really struggling with this. Obviously, there's a good bit of personal shame in it being Walter. I mean, this guy's been around Hank the entire time. Hank has been on this fanatic quest to figure out who Heisenberg is.
Yeah.
And for it to be right under Hank's nose and Hank not to see it, there's a lot of shame in that. And so I'm not sure Hank's going to really come right out with it. There's always a chance Hank will try to build a bigger case, start looking at Walter a little bit differently, and really take his time with it. I also think there's a good chance Walter's cancer could come back. And Hank could be faced with a situation where Walt's on his deathbed and Hank has to decide whether he's going to arrest him and make him die in prison or let him die with his family. There's a lot of possibilities there with Hank, There's also the possibility that Walter could just go truly evil and figure out that Hank's on him and just off him. And I could see it. I just don't think that of the two scenarios, I think that's less likely. What do you think?
I feel like we're at some point Walter is going to be plotting the murder of Hank. I don't know if he's going to be successful, but I feel like around episode 5, episode 6, Walter is figuring out a plan to kill Hank.
He may already have one, you know, secreted away in the back of his mind somewhere. You know, if the heat gets too hot, what does he need to do with Hank? But I agree with you. I have no doubt in my mind that if Walter has any inkling at all that Hank is onto him, he will immediately start formulating how he's going to deal with Hank. I don't think he'll hesitate for a second, you know, getting rid of him if he has to.
How much of a cop out would it be for the show to end with Walter dying from the cancer?
I think that it wouldn't be a cop out depending on what got, you know, what they did before they got there. You know, I don't want to spoil any movies, but a lot of these criminal kingpins in these movies, they don't always die, you know, in a hail of bullets. Sometimes they die alone and sad in their garden. And so I'm not saying that that's the fate I see for Walter White. I'm just saying that if they get there, you know, having crossed a lot of these other bridges and dealt with a lot of things, and maybe he's redeemed himself to a certain extent, I'm not sure it will be a cop out. They're going to have a lot of dramatic action before that, before I accept it. But I think they can get there.
And
what do you think that there would be a cop out?
I think it would be. I think either this has to end where, you know, we had the Sopranos ending with the fade to black. And I think most people either wanted to see Tony dead or Tony in jail. And unfortunately, we got neither. And you can debate whether or not that was a great way to end it. But I think that Walter, you know, the cancer being ultimately what does Walter in, I think that feels like that he kind of got away with it, you know?
Yeah, and I think I'm sure they have a better, like a more rewarding, even probably ironic ending in mind. That the cancer ending him is what we've kind of expected from the jump. You know, he was given essentially a very poor prognosis from the start. And it certainly is something that's been on our minds, and he's cheated death in so many other ways. For that to happen, you know, I definitely agree with you that, you know, it could be a cop out depending on what they did before that. You know, it could be that if you went with the Hank scenario where Hank has chosen not to put him in jail and let him just kind of die, then we'll know that he was caught, you know, that Hank had gotten the upper hand, that Walter ultimately would suffer, you know, but, you know, Hank chose to let him off. And I don't know if that's what will happen. If it happened that way, I would have less of an issue with the cancer. But if it just happens where, hey, he escapes and, you know, he gets through some scrapes in season 8 and things come crashing down, but, you know, ultimately he is able to peacefully die of cancer on his own accord, that would probably not be the ending I would wish for.
All right, couple more quick ones. Where is Walter going with the machine gun?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I don't know. Maybe Afghanistan. I have no idea. He got tracer rounds, which I think are used so that you can see where you're shooting, either, you know, at night or, you know, if you're shooting into the air. So that's very disturbing. Clearly, he's up against some heavy artillery. I have no idea what his plan is. If I had to guess, I'd say somebody has been kidnapped or holed up somewhere and they want Walt's recipe, or they want Walt to, you know, come give his life for theirs. And so he's going to try to, you know, take the place. I really don't know. He needed a manual for it, so he may have a very specific use in mind. But I really don't have a good idea where. I'm fascinated to find out.
I was talking to a friend a couple of weeks ago. He had a theory. He said that he thought maybe Walter was going to take on Landry's uncle's gang.
Yeah, it's certainly possible, and they could have some sort of compound, or they could have some sort of, you know, place where they're kind of holed up, and Walter could, you know, Vince Gilligan is a big fan of Westerns, and so that would be kind of the ultimate Western showdown at high noon or a shootout at the OK Corral kind of ending, if Walter just rolled up heavily armed to the teeth, you know, just shooting up an entire gang of, you know, thugs in some sort of, you know, Wild West kind of setting. That would certainly be, you know, fitting. I don't know exactly how that would fit in the overall scheme of the show, but that certainly seems like it could work.
And what ends up happening with the Walter and Skyler marriage?
That's also a good question. She's already walked into a pool. She's already effed tea. literally and figuratively, I think, in that regard. I think that she's going to be faced with a decision where she might be in a position where she has to decide whether to forgive him for what he's done before he dies or not. If they want to give her that moment as an actress, they can certainly find a way to do it.
And I'm not going to hold my breath for that.
Yeah, I'm not either. She's certainly not a fan favorite, but she's had some great reactions to what Walt has done. And she's kind of been in an untenable position of
She's pretty good. I used to not care for Skyler, but I've come to think that she's a good part of the show.
Yeah, I think it's necessary. I really think you need to see the impact this guy has on his family, even
though... no Betty Draper.
Yeah, exactly. Much better.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to do on this show is we always like to do this when we talk about something that's not reality TV related, to sort of bring it back to Survivor or Big Brother, whatever direction you want to go. Let's cast Breaking Bad with reality TV people. Now, this does not have to necessarily be the people who necessarily look like them. It's better if they look like them and kind of are them. So, and this is going to be a challenge. But so, Antonio, let me ask you, who is the reality TV Walter White?
That's a really tough question. It's certainly one that I considered in advance of this podcast.
Oh, good. Good thinking.
I had a feeling the question would be coming. You have to go with someone who is evil on the inside, capable of true manipulation, capable of everything that you wonder if human beings are capable of. And there's just a few people, I think, that are, and you have to go with someone too, who's incredibly brilliant. So, I mean, you can't necessarily pull in people who are just really smart at their game or really good at business. I think you have to go with somebody who has some sort of background that they're really brilliant.
Brilliant
at manipulation.
And evil. Okay.
And brilliant and evil. Yeah. I think from the Big Brother world, I mean, obviously there's a couple candidates, right? I mean, you have your evil Dick, you have your Dr. Will. You have people that, are master manipulators and or are people who people kind of love to hate or want to root for and against at the same time. And I'm not sure what your thinking is in that regard.
So you're saying either Dr. Will or Evil Dick?
That's just from Big Brother. I mean, there are probably a lot of other good examples from the Survivor world. All I know is that I think the JT from Survivor would make an excellent Jesse. But I don't know about Walter. I don't know that we've got a great candidate. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm trying to think it through. I did not think about this ahead of time. Dr. Will, I feel like he's not quite a Walter White because Walter White was such a schlub to start with that
he then came
to the show and then became sort of like this evil genius.
Are you saying John Cochran Walter
White?
No,
I was going to go a different Big Brother.
Right.
What about Dan Gheesling?
Walter White has avoided his own funeral on numerous occasions, and he certainly hasn't staged one, but he's definitely played like he's, on the verge of death to get Jesse's sympathies. So
yeah.
I think there's definitely something to be said.
I mean, Dan came in as sort of like this. He was sort of like a nice kid in the first time he played, to like when we get to the end of his second season and the whole jury is very upset with Dan of how he, and basically, I mean, was what Dan did to Shane and Danielle. I mean, that was basically the reality TV equivalent of Lilia the Poppy last year.
That's a very fair point. And I think that perhaps in that regard, then, not to that it's necessarily that way, but he, the person that people ended up rooting for is Ian Terry. So maybe he makes a decent Jesse in that regard.
Interesting. Anybody else for Jesse? I'm trying to think of anybody who's a little more of a, from the street. Anybody else that would be more like Jesse in attitude?
somebody with, I mean, I guess like, it's interesting because Jesse's very, you know, yeah, bitch, and like very willing to just throw down with any kind of phrase or time, and definitely very fiery at times. And I think there's a lot of Shane Powers in that for sure. But I like JT not from the streets angle, but from JT's a very nice guy who, you know, it was very much taken in by Russell Hance and very much swayed by just a little bit of, you know, evil that he came into contact with in that game. And it really worked well on the heroes versus villains side. Not that Jesse was a hero at the beginning of Breaking Bad, but that he, you know, wanted to be heroic despite his best efforts and just ended up being his own worst enemy in that regard. So I think there's a little bit of that to be said. I can't think of anyone from Big Brother per se. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, it's tough. And these are good. These would be great for the people in the comments also to, and on Twitter also, to let us know who the people that obviously were missing from this group. How about Skylar? We have a good Skylar out there. How about Sherry Beetham?
You know, that was actually my thought as well. And part of that is, you know, that she was very capable and very, you know, smart at what she was doing, as Skylar is in what she's doing. But she had a little bit of an unlikable edge to her where, you know, she was definitely, I think, maybe coming off in a way that she wouldn't have wanted to ultimately come off. And Skylar maybe isn't getting the best edit, as we can say. So maybe that's accurate.
Here, let me give you another Jesse. He is a frequent guest on Rob as a podcast. What about Matt Hoffman as Jesse?
I think that's pretty good, actually. Certainly, I think Matt's got a lot more going on upstairs than Jesse would. So the comparison is not apt in that regard. But I think that the whole kind of devil may care attitude, I definitely think there's a good inkling there. What do you think in terms of his gameplay? Do you think there's anything that shows up with Jesse?
A little bit, because, you know, he ends up being, you know, sort of in this brigade and I'm the diabolical super genius, and he ends up making up this lie about the whole thing with his wife. But at the end of the day, he sort of like had too big of a heart, I feel like. And like he could have like screwed over Enzo and those guys, and he had like the Diamond Power of Vito, and he could have totally screwed over the brigade and taken everything for control. But he ends up putting up Kathy up on the block. And I feel like that was sort of like he didn't have the heart to totally screw over his friends in the house.
I think that's accurate. I think that's really, you know, a good observation.
All right. So Dan Giesling as Walter White, then Matt Hoffman as Jesse, Sherry Beetham as Skylar. Who's Hank? Now, who has a law enforcement background?
I'm trying to think.
We got to have a cop in one of these shows.
Yeah.
Is he Cappy?
I don't have a good Hank on my mind. I apologize.
I'm sure there's a good Hank out there. It's got to be somebody.
He's also got to be somebody who, you know, is very capable, but also has the wool pulled over their eyes totally and completely by someone close to them in
okay.
the game.
This is a little off type. What about the specialist?
That's not bad. And there's a law enforcement background there.
Yes.
And there's certainly I think Hank is Hank's own biggest fan, right? Like, and his relationship with Gomi, he throws around a lot of epithets and words, you know, nicknames here and there. You know, he's very much into that sort of way of relating to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I actually think the specialist would put it together a lot quicker than Hank can.
Yeah, well, and there's a little bit of a fine line with Hank of like, is Hank really on the case, or is he kind of bumbling? And I think that the people have that same debate about the specialist.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good. And I don't think it's as off type as you think. I mean, they both have similar hairstyles.
Yes.
You know, they have the similar backgrounds. I think that that's pretty good, actually.
All right. What about Saul Goodman? Is there a Saul Goodman in the reality TV world? I mean,
there, how many lawyers, the reality, especially Survivor, is rife with seedy lawyers. Oh, and good ones as well. But you'd have to get somebody who, you know, Saul's actually a very good lawyer. He's very good at the things that he does. He comes up with, you know, a lot of good plans and ideas, and I don't think anyone would accuse him of being bad. Ethical? No, he's incredibly unethical. But in terms of his actions as a person, I don't think that he's, you know, bad at his job. So I don't know.
David Murphy?
I was going to say David Murphy, but his stint on Survivor was such a letdown, and Saul has been anything but. So I don't know that the comparison is necessarily accurate. That's a good question. It's also somebody that, you know, Saul's always pulling these guys out of the woodwork. Saul's always got a plan, you know, plan A, plan B, and plan C. And he's always ready to kind of adapt when things are going wrong for Saul. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Saul. And how about Mike?
What about you got to have the kind of grizzled veteran, right? The guy who's kind of seen it and been there. What about Rudy?
Rudy is pretty good.
You know, he's got his own kind of gruff way that you have to relate to him, and he's likable in that way. But, you know, he just has his own way of doing things, and God help you if you want to go against that, you know?
Yeah. Mike is pretty good. Very sad to see Mike go last season. He's very like he's always like annoyed. He's, Walter, come on. What are we doing? I really loved Mike on the show. We don't get a lot of older folks on Survivor these days. So it's tough to come up with a older guy who would be Mike other than Rudy, but I feel like what about Dan Lembo?
That would be pretty good, actually. And that one, you know, Dan is allegedly, and like Mike, Dan had this fortune stashed away somewhere somehow, and you know, it didn't, you know, it just didn't really make any bones about it. And he definitely was, he had a little bit of an edge to him. I don't know if how Mike would have responded to his shoes having the issue that Dan's did, but I don't think he would have taken as well as Dan did to it.
Dan Lembo also, like when I did the exit interview with him after the show's over, he was on the phone. He's like, is this mandatory? Do I have to do this? very Mike-like response.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. One of my favorite Mike moments is when Walt is telling the guy, you know who I am, say my name. Mike is just in the background shaking his head like, Jesus Christ.
All right. Any other principles from Breaking Bad that we want to throw out?
I mean, the only other one we really could get into is Gustavo Fring. And I don't know how you even begin to cast Gus. Because he is truly a murderous. Like, you know, I don't think you want to tag anybody with what Gus has. Although he's self-made, he's really pulled himself to the top, you know, and he came from very humble beginnings. He's a very, you know, private man. I don't really know how to cast Gus. I wish there was a way to get Richard Hatch into this, but there really isn't. And it certainly isn't with Gus.
Well, what about sticking with Dan Lembo? What about Marty Piombo?
For Gus. That's interesting.
It's not great.
Well, Marty is smart enough, I think, to be Gus. And Marty, you know, got outplayed in the game ultimately, despite the fact that he was very ready to play. And I think part of the problem with Marty is that he felt like the people around him weren't of his caliber and weren't ready to play like he was. And, you know, part of the issue with Gus is that, you know, he has some things in his organization that have some holes, and he puts himself in some positions where he ultimately, you know, gets in bed with people like Walter White who were ready to take him down because he read him wrong. And so that there's some accuracy there, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, if you guys have better suggestions for Antonio and myself, you can go ahead and tell us them in the comments or on Twitter. And then that's going to do it for our preview. We hope you guys enjoyed this Breaking Bad preview. Hope we didn't embarrass ourselves too much. I think it was went pretty well.
Yeah, I feel like I talked a lot, but I
fantastic.
I feel okay.
That was great. So Join us on Sunday night, and we're still waiting to make the call if it's going to be live or not. But stay tuned; we will let you guys know ahead of time. So just keep an eye on Twitter, and we'll keep you updated on what's what. So we will be either Sunday night or Monday nights as well on the. We should probably have more information for people.
Well, sounding absolutely. A little sketchy. I feel like I failed you somehow.
No, this is on me. We should have these production meetings before we come on the air. But anyway, so you guys know where to go. RobHasAWebsite.com. We will keep you posted on everything. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Rob Cesternino. And Antonio, what is your Twitter handle? Well, give it out to people if they want to talk to you about Breaking Bad on Twitter.
It's my name at A. It's A.C. A. Antonio C. Christopher Mazzaro. M as in Mary, A-Z-Z-A-R-O. At A.C. Mazzaro.
And I'll put it on the website, too, in the show notes for this podcast. So, and then the hope is then by after this show goes up, we will get approved in the iTunes store, and then you'll be able to subscribe to the Breaking Bad feed of Rob Has a Podcast for these final 8 episodes. So, very exciting time. Looking forward to it. Antonio, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Rob. It was a pleasure.
If you're listening to this on Thursday, we are going to have our live Big Brother show after the eviction Thursday night with my good friend Eric Stein. Will be back with us. And then this just in, no exit interviews on Friday. It looks like everybody is going to be on the jury that's left in the Big Brother house. So we will have 5 questions via print with the 2 people that get evicted in the double elimination episode. Then on Sunday, we'll be back to talk about more Big Brother. And Antonio and I will talk about the half-season premiere of Breaking Bad. So lots to do here on Rob Has a Podcast the next couple days. Antonio, get some rest.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, we'll talk.
I'd already gone to sleep. Sorry. Thanks.
All right, everybody. Have a good one. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Take care.